Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
What it do? This is Carl.
I'm Will, and this is our 11th episode.
This is probably our funkiest episode so far.
Yeah, so far we're off to a pretty funky start.
I don't want you to think that the whole episode is going to be this level of funk.
Yeah, this isn't the funk theme.
I think that would be actually impossible, because this might be the funkiest track I've ever heard.
What is this even from?
This is from a video game, in case you were wondering. This is from a game called Interstate 76.
Okay, well, we should, fade this out, because we're going to talk about this a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll play this a little bit later on. But
anyways, as you probably read, the title of this week's episode is Show and Tell Volume 2. Now, we did Show and Tell Volume 1 a few months back now, so it's about time to do another one.
I think that was our third episode, yeah. And this is our 11th episode?
Yeah, time flies.
That's pretty cool. How's it going, Will?
I'm actually doing fantastic.
You have How a really nice shirt on.
Oh, thank you.
I like the color scheme. It's kind of a flannel, but
yeah. I like
nice
these
blues
reds
and
blues.
Yeah.
Since I'm kind of colorblind, when I bought it, I thought it was red and black, which were the school colors. But
oh, I see.
Then I realized
it still
I
works.
Was very wrong.
Hopefully you guys are having a good week as well. Hopefully you enjoyed our last kind of departure episode.
I had so much fun. Man, Marty is just. Marty, if you're listening to this, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks again, Marty, for doing that. Yeah,
that was really fun.
That was kind of cool changing it up a little bit, getting some new blood in there.
Yeah.
It was good.
Also, it was kind of fun having like a three-way interaction.
Oh, totally. And the setup was different. Cool. We were a little bit more laid back as far as how we set it up. So it was just kind of lend itself to have a little bit more of a conversational kind of style. It was kind of nice. But we'll definitely do more of that at some point. But yeah, this will be a pretty good episode. I picked, I think, about 11 tracks. I think Will picked 10.
Yeah, I think I picked 10 because of a few of mine I want to play through longer because they're not conventional video game songs like we normal play. Some of them are a little bit more film score-ish, if you will, and
that's good to hear, because I thought it was because you were just lazy and couldn't come up with an 11th one.
Well, it's also that.
11th track in the 11th hour.
So I just got really long ones.
Hey, Will, did you hear about the rumor of the Super Mario 4?
I know, I saw that. I read that on
Nintendo registered domain for
Super
Mario 4.
Insert website name here. I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything. I read it on IGN, but
I read it on IGN.com.
Or any one of those other fabulous websites. I don't know. Are there laws? Am I able to express my...
You know what? I think you can say whatever you want to say on this podcast.
Okay, well, I like
Although,
IGN.
I do think that we are under the clean category for iTunes. So, I mean, I think, maybe hell and ass are okay, because I think we've said both of those. But maybe anything other than that, maybe just you know...
We should get, a clever little bleep noise.
We should.
Like, maybe have the Mario 1-up sound for...
Well, I mean, because we do swear all the time, so...
Yeah. As you guys have noticed.
No, we try to keep it pretty classy on this podcast.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, do you want to just go into this?
Yeah, let's start it off.
Okay, so fun. I'm gonna start one off. So, the way this works is I'm actually going to start and end it off today, since I have one more track than you, but
because I was lazy. I was a lazy boy this week.
Yeah, so, this first track's pretty cool. It's an orchestral track. This is from a game called Albert Odyssey Gaiden, and this came out for the Saturn. I have a few Saturn tracks today.
Albert Odyssey Gaiden?
Yeah, that's
the Japanese.
It sounds
like it's mixing, a bunch of games. Like, I'm thinking of Abe's Odyssey and Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah. Oh, Gaiden. Sorry, I said Gaiden. Whatever. I never knew if it was Ninja
Gaiden
or Ninja Gaiden. But anyway, that was a Japanese title. The U.S. title was something with Albert Odyssey in there. But anyway, this was composed by Naoki Kodaka, who is a classic composer. We played at Blaster Master.
Oh, yeah.
He did so many good games.
Fantastic.
And actually, my second track today is also by him. But anyway.
Didn't he work for Sunsoft?
He did. He was one of the...
Great, great, great.
He was probably the pinnacle of the Sunsoft composers. But here is the main theme 1 from Albert Odyssey Gaiden.
Thank you.
That's Main Theme 1 from Albert Odyssey Gaiden, composed by Naoki Kodaka. That guy is a G.
That was very, very pretty. I really like just... I really like solo violinists in that really high range.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very beautiful, especially in a video game.
Yeah, what's really cool about this is it's distinctly Japanese style, mm-hmm. which is so good for... And what's the cool thing about a lot of these Saturn soundtracks is they were some of the earliest example of full orchestrated soundtracks. They kind of went crazy with that idea. They were really excited to have that capability. So, I mean, a lot of times, like, they're more epic than even the game, but it kind of helps, you know, add a lot more realism to
what
the game.
This kind of reminds me, I don't know even know why, but I guess that just sort of this sort of sparse arrangement just for that like one string instrument, it kind of reminds me of Red Dead Redemption a little bit. Very reverby and sort of ambient,
but not the compositional style.
Yeah, the compositional style is completely different, but
more
the
American Western,
the instruments,
okay,
sort of the instrument choice.
It's so weird, ever since we did that Ease episode, and I'm preparing for the second one, which we'll actually do next week, everything I hear is like, oh, it sounds kind of Ease to me, but I'm probably just, like, too immersed in it, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
This is very pretty.
Cool track.
I'd like to hear that before I fall asleep. That doesn't mean that it's boring, it's just...
I got it.
It's relaxing. Oh, it's my turn. Well, I actually am going to start off with another orchestral one. This is one of my favorite video game pieces. It's from Heart of Darkness, and the composer, he doesn't compose for most video games. Mm-hmm. Like he's mainly like composes for film and whatnot. And his name is Bruce Broughton.
Oh, okay.
And
Bruce, he's great.
This is a very, very good soundtrack.
This is one of my favorite games.
Yeah, this game is great. It was made by a man named Eric Chahi, and he is most well known for making a game called Another World, or Out of This World if you live in North America.
Which, again, is one of my favorite games of all
time.
Yeah,
he's a very artistic video game designer. But what we're here for is the score to this game is very good, and we're going to be playing the opening title cue. And if you remember last week when Marty was here, and we were talking about The Secret of Monkey Island, how mm-hmm. it starts off, and it's like a film score, so it has those little taglines for when you see the Lucasfilm logo, for instance. This game also uses that, and the opening is like a cutscene, so it very much feels like a very cinematic experience. And
very
one,
cool.
One thing that I really like is, I just want to get a little bit off topic, a lot of games nowadays that use orchestral soundtracks, they choose to be more like, I don't know, an episode of like an action show on TV, and less of sort of like a John Williams-esque rousing score. And this definitely reminds me more of the latter.
Well, because it's harder to do. Not everyone can compose that. It's really easy to just put a bunch of, you know, kind of sequence things into, you know, a program and just have that kind of more percussion-based action theme. That's a lot easier to compose.
Right.
But anyway, we're going to actually play this whole thing in its entirety. Is that what you wanted to do?
Yep.
All right, so this is the entire main title from Heart of Darkness. Enjoy.
candy. I'm sorry. That's wow. what happens right at that part in the score.
What an intense piece of music.
Gosh, that's so gorgeous. If you're not familiar with the game and you've been listening along, the part when the timpani and like the crash cymbal come in and it goes dun 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 dun, that is when the title of the game is displayed on the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very great. And then it's sort of the intro sequence is this like flying through space, and what it is the protagonist Andy is asleep in class, so like you can hear mm-hmm. the teacher's voice reverberating, but it's actually giving a little bit of like exposition to how the plot of the game sort of makes sense mm-hmm. where you're going to this weird like yeah. alien world. It's very cool.
Yeah, we highly recommend checking the game out. All right, so I'm going to take over the reins here. It just so happened that I have another Naoki Kodaka track, but this is kind of cool. This is from his NES days. This is a really well-known and well-respected soundtrack. This is Batman, the video game.
Oh, yeah, this game, great music.
Yeah, Marty actually recommended me play a song from this a long time ago. He's, you know, from one of our first episodes, he's like, oh, I play a track from Batman.
Yeah, I really like the intro. I don't think you're playing this, but no. The intro song, like there's a part where you're like driving in the Batmobile too. And it's like, din, 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 yeah. din, din,
what
din,
I like,
din,
though, is a lot of this music doesn't really sound very Batman-y,
right.
which is great for, of you know, very typical of NES music, where it doesn't really sound like what the game is, but it's great music. Here is Laboratory Ruins from Batman. Laboratory Ruins from Batman. This opening riff is the best part, I think, of the song. Uh-huh. It's really masterfully done. The song's in D minor, so I think the chords are D minor, B flat, G minor, and I guess A. It's kind of ambiguous, but what's cool is the notes of that arpeggiated riff fit every single chord. They all contain notes of all four of those chords, which is cool because that riff never changes there.
Uh-huh.
Which is really effective how he just had, he came up with one riff that worked over all those four chords.
Reminds me of in DuckTales, you know, the moon.
It's very similar to that idea. But I actually kind of wish he would have changed it for the last chord, because the way it is now, the last chord would have to be an A minor because he doesn't change that C. I kind of wish he went to the C sharp and that make an A major, because that's kind of what I feel like it could or should have been. But that's just my opinion. But other than that, it's a really good piece.
Well, the first thing that struck me is when I heard that arpeggiated thing, it almost sounds identical to the beginning of a track in Castlevania II, Simon's Quest.
I was actually just going to talk about how it sounds very Castlevania-ish to me.
Well, there's a track, it's literally exactly, it starts off the same way. It goes...
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the best tracks
from our episode
on Castlevania.
That one's great. I think that's called...
Dracula's Tears, or...
No, but
Bloody Tears. Bloody Tears. Yeah, we played two versions of it, I remember. But I wonder what came first. That's the real question.
When is this?
85, 86? I actually don't remember. I don't have it listed here.
I think Castlevania was...
That was 80. From Castlevania 2, though, right?
Oh.
Was it?
Maybe that was 86 or 80s.
Wow. Good job, us, for not researching either of these two things, but...
I'm failing.
Maybe while the next song plays.
The only reason I'm here is because I'm a nerd. Otherwise, Carl could do this podcast himself. I'm just here
oh,
for
come on.
Nerd appeal, and I can't even...
What, am I supposed to build you up now for your self-esteem? Oh, no, Will. You're good. No, but I think while this next track plays, maybe we'll go on the old internets and figure that out for fun. But what do you got, Will, next?
Next, I have a track from the NES version of Metal Gear, and... The Metal Gear series, or rather the Metal Gear Solid series, is a gigantic franchise nowadays, but a little backstory is the game was made in Japan by Hideo Kojima for the MSX2, and when it was ported in America, it's considered not the best port because they didn't do a very respectful job of it. Mm-hmm. Like Hideo Kojima thought that a lot of his stealth elements didn't come quite through in the original game.
Yeah.
And the track that I'm playing is the jungle theme, which mm-hmm. is from the beginning of the NES game, which that part isn't even in the MSX2.
But this jungle theme is one of the most famous tracks from this game, actually.
Yeah. So, that being said, we're going to play Jungle Theme from Metal Gear.
Alrighty, here we go.
Jungle Theme from Metal Gear, composed by Ikuo Mizutani and Kazuki Muruwaka. And I really like this one. The intervals for some of those notes and like the harmonies, even though the game is not necessarily the best port, it definitely has like a sneaky sort of spy
yeah.
quality to it. Not necessarily like Mission Impossible or anything.
Well, it's hard to make a game really that way on the NES.
Right.
I mean,
does a good job. But mm-hmm. it sounds kind of sneaky and like a secret agent.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, guys, we found out that Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest did come out before Batman, 2 years before. Came out in 87 versus 89, so he might have, Kodaka may have ripped that off.
Right. But anyways, back to this. This is definitely one of the more iconic NES tracks.
Yeah, for sure.
And me and Carl were discussing over the break why they didn't use this necessarily in a later Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, I think
game.
They should have remixed it.
Well, and I think the reason behind that being is Hideo Kojima still directs those games, and
yep.
he probably didn't like this very much, he kind of wanted to distance this from the franchise as much as possible.
Oh, totally makes sense. I wonder how much control he had over the music, though. That would
only happen if someone was
maybe
like,
someone
hey,
tried.
I should go back and do this.
Maybe someone tried and showed it to him. He's like, what are you doing? Blasphemy, and slapped him across the face. That sounds like something they would do. I don't know, just really strict. I mean, I don't know, maybe that would produce a really good game.
Here at the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast, we have the epitome of cultural understanding, so.
I think we do. All right, so the next track I'm going to play is from a very famous game called Breath of Fire.
Oh, yeah, that is very famous.
This is for the SNES and features pretty much like the A-list of classic Capcom composers of the time.
I have to make a confession. I've never played this game. So
I've played part of it.
I know that it's famous, but
it has really good music.
I've never played it.
The composers, really classic Capcom composers, this one. You have Yasuaki Fujita, Yoko Shimomura, Mine Fuji, and Mary Yamaguchi, just like the A-team of composers for Capcom at the time. Very well-received soundtrack, well-loved soundtrack. I'm going to play maybe one of the more sensitive tracks of the game. This is called Alan and Searle Forever, so kind of a love theme. And what's really funny about this track is like about like two-thirds of the way through, it changes to a piano sound, and it's incredibly out of tune because it's SNES. But it's
almost as out of tune as the guitar
it's
from
more.
Mega Man X.
I think it might be more. But anyway, it's a great song. Here it is.
Thank you.
That's Alan and Searle Forever from Breath of Fire. That's a really pretty song. Some kind of funny pitch issues there. You're not used to hearing pitch issues with MIDI music. That's why it kind of stands out. But yeah, it's really melancholy, kind of minor key lullaby, very typical of this era. It reminds me of Laputa.
We
brushed on that in our Ease episode. We'll probably talk about that movie and that soundtrack again in the future.
Well, yeah, that composer...
Joe Hisaishi.
Yeah, we mentioned that he was the music or piano teacher...
Of Yuzo Koshiro.
For Yuzo Koshiro, who composed, like, the Ease music. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a little...
And lots of other amazing soundtracks as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I definitely heard that influence on this piece.
Very pretty.
It's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, I'm going to take the reins for a bit, and I'm going to play last time on this show and tell volume. On volume one, I played some tracks from DuckTales for the NES, and I mentioned how awesome the music for the game is.
Ah.
But now I'm going to play another one. This is from a track called The Himalayas, and what's interesting and what struck me is when I was playing this game, this track doesn't, to me, it almost sounds too goofy for, like, in-game level. It almost sounds an end of the stage type of thing, or like a bonus stage. Well, why don't you take a listen and tell me what you think?
Yeah, we'll listen to it. This is The Himalayas from DuckTales.
Himalayas from DuckTales. And the man who composed this game, his name is Yoshiro Sakaguchi, and I have so much respect for him compositionally and technologically. I mean, so many things about the music of this game are just so advanced, in my opinion. I feel like his compositional skills and his technical skills with being able to input things and, like, some of the delay effects that he used in this game, they both blend together and they make it sound so full. I mean, he's definitely one of the better NES composers I've heard. I don't know if he's done much other video game music.
He really hasn't. There are some other people credited with working on the soundtrack. It's one of those things where it's hard to know if they just did sound effects, or I've seen some other websites where other people are actually credited for composing, but I have seen a lot where he was, so it's one of those things where it's hard to know who actually did it. But if he did it alone, he definitely hasn't really done much else. And he did, I think, some things before this. I don't know how much he did after, but it's kind of surprising. This definitely would fall into one of the maybe top 10 NES soundtracks of all time,
mm-hmm.
which for most people that haven't heard and you just hear DuckTales, like, what? Like, are you kidding me?
But, yeah, well, I mean, I think it's pretty widely known.
Yeah, but for the average person maybe who doesn't know that the music's mm-hmm. that good, when you just hear, oh, the DuckTales NES game, they would never expect
anyways,
that.
Anyways, what did you guys think? I know that this is sort of like a one-way podcast and you can't, like, shout into your headphones and say what you think, but I think it sounds kind of... like more goofy than most of the tracks in the game. Like, it sounds like a bonus stage. Like,
oh, it's ding, one ding, of the goofier ding, ones in the ding, game. Yeah, honestly, I think this fits DuckTales better than any other one. I mean, as far as the not taking itself too seriously, I think it's kind of ridiculous that he wrote a piece like The Moon, which is so amazing for DuckTales. I mean, this is, if all the tracks sounded like this, it would be a little bit more believable for me.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's not
and the
good
game,
bad
but
thing.
The game is really good. The game
is
fun.
Yeah. You actually bought it recently and actually played it, right?
Yeah. Just a little side note. Look for this coming soon. I'm going to do, just to change it up, to do some different things on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a review of that game. And it's like a 30-year-old game, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to, like, critically review it. I'm just going to talk about it.
Doesn't hold up to Black Ops, man.
I'm going to just sort of talk about the little aspects of the game, and then I'm going to talk a lot about the music of it.
Nice.
Because, I mean, it's one of my favorite new soundtracks that I've discovered in the past couple of years. So.
Cool. Well, we will look forward to that. Maybe one of many to come, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Cool. All right. Well, now it's time for me to play a track. I love this track. This was one of my favorite discoveries I made this week. It's from another Sega Saturn game. This is a game called Sega Rally Championship, and this is this track is called Desert Replay. So, you know, obviously you finished a race and you watch the replay, and this is what you hear, and it's perfect. And I wonder if it's also maybe used for like the demo, because a lot of times for these racing games, that is the replay also is the beginning demo. So I think this would be a perfect demo song too if it was used for that. But either way, this is composed by Hitaki Kotsaki. And let's take
butchered
a listen.
That name there, didn't you?
This is a really jazzy, groovy track. It's really solo-y and just kind of all over the place, but it's fun. Kind of in the arcade style. Not incredibly melodic, but it's a lot of fun and it keeps your interest throughout. Here we go. Desert Replay from Sega Rally Championship, composed by Hitaya Kotsaki.
Gosh, this is so very Japanese.
Oh, yeah. It's unmistakable.
It reminds me, I mean, I guess, of something from like Mario Kart 64?
But a lot more funky, though.
Obviously. I guess, I mean, the chords and the sort of spaciness. Mm-hmm.
Really nice synths and really kind of soloistic, fast.
Gosh, this was for the Saturn?
Mm-hmm.
Saturn music really holds up better than PlayStation music.
I totally agree.
Like there was like a chip in the system that was different.
There was. Maybe. This wasn't using that. This was CD audio. A lot of the...
Well, yeah, wasn't PlayStation CD audio too?
Yeah, but it also had a built-in actual chip
Because it was the 32-bit sound.
Yeah, I mean, just like 64 or anything, some soundtracks were like CD audio,
well,
and some were
based on the
built-in chip.
I thought they were all using CD audio.
Nope, some of them used the built-in chip. There were some soundtracks.
Well,
yeah, for Saturn.
Why. Of course it's not going to sound as good.
Yeah, there were some Saturn games that did not use...
It's a 64-bit chip, and the... PlayStation only gets a 32-bit chip.
Yeah, there were definitely some Saturn games that you just use the built-in chip, and obviously it's a lot, it doesn't sound nearly as good, of course.
No, but I guess that's so much more tasteful. I mean, even the PlayStation music that's using the CD instruments, I still feel is like overdone and cheesy.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends game to game. I'm sure there's some that are really tasteful done, but I just have a feeling like we've talked about
even
our
even the
opinions.
Good music though, like from Symphony of the Night, like that's a very well acclaimed soundtrack, but to me it sounds very cheesy.
And that was just what they decided to go at the time. They could have done anything, you know. It was kind of up to them. I think they're, for example, Heart of Darkness, that came out for PlayStation, so that would have been the exact same soundtrack we just heard. So that would have been a case of a tastefully done soundtrack.
That's true.
It's kind of game to game. I think it just so happens that there happen to be, at least in our opinion, some cheesier kind of sounding PlayStation soundtracks, but maybe that's not to crap on all
of
them.
Gosh, that makes me want to listen to Heart of Darkness again. Oh, well, I should do my next one. I think I mentioned this. Whoa,
yeah, we mentioned this a lot.
Boss
there was,
themes
do you
want to
talk
something?
About the confusion you had, actually?
Okay, well, when we were doing our boss themes episode, I told Carl, oh, from Sonic 3D Blast, I really want to do that end boss song. It's really cool because it doesn't really sound like an end boss. For some reason, I was thinking it was from the Saturn version. I don't know why.
Not true.
But I was thinking, we played it, and that one's actually really cool, too. But
it wasn't the one you were thinking.
I was honestly referring to the Genesis version.
Yeah, so if you go back and listen to that episode, Will's description of it is nothing like what we actually like.
Oh, it doesn't sound like a boss song, and then like the song is like a stereotypical boss
song. It's a cool, it kind of is a Tim Burton kind of sound.
So I sort of like ate my face there.
But this one, you're totally right. It sounds nothing like a boss song.
I really was captivated when I first heard this, because Carl was showing it to me, and he's like, oh, this doesn't really sound like a boss song, but then I listened to it and it's very spacey and ambient.
It's weird,
very pretty. I really enjoy it. So this is the final boss theme from Sonic 3D Blast, written by Jun Senoway.
Here we go.
Fight from Sonic 3D Blast, and that really low, like double kick drum sound, like it's very weird. But
yeah, the drums sound not too pretty.
It sounds like I like it though. It sounds like a double kick, like something that you'd hear in like a metal.
These spacey
song.
Chords here, and the instrument is so weird for a boss theme, and then that 8-bit melody,
right,
which is really Japanese sounding. It's just very odd.
I like the note it lands
for the final boss. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because his normal boss theme for this game is perfect, it's kind of Sonic style
again,
but then this, it is just, I don't know what he was
it
going
makes
for,
use
but
of like the ninth
cool.
intervals and stuff, but I think it's incredibly pretty, but it is very weird. A little story to go behind this. What was it? Marty still uses this as an example, like a life lesson teaching moment. He was just talking about this the
other day. Okay, so here's what happened. Me and Marty, this was like, I don't even know if you were born. I think it was actually a year before you were born, possibly.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, maybe you were one.
Oh, maybe.
When this game came out. Okay, we're splitting hairs here. But anyway,
I don't think so. Wait, didn't
you were not in the picture. So me and Marty rented the game from a video store, which is, if you guys don't know what a video store is actually you went into this building and you could rent videos and video games.
I know. I had trouble believing it when he told me the story.
But so anyways, we were playing Sonic 3D Blast, and you know, maybe about like half an hour into the game, I discovered this cheat, and I think it was a glitch, because later on I figured out that the only real level select code you could do was just from the title screen. But this is, I somehow did it while I was playing the game, so I don't know what happened, but somehow I accessed this level select cheat, and I was like, oh my gosh, and I gave the controller to Marty, and what did he do? He didn't go to other levels to check out the rest of the game and get, nope, he went right to the final boss theme, and I was like, or the final boss stage. I was like, Marty, what are you doing? You're going to die. I want to see the rest of the game. He's like, no, no, no. And of course, he died right away. So we didn't get to see the rest of the levels. We just got to see like 2 seconds of this final boss.
And he still uses that as like a teaching moment. Like, Marty is very good. Hopefully I'm not embarrassing you, Marty, but he's very good with metaphors, and he makes metaphors all the time.
I think
like
it is
situations.
A teachable moment. I think
he's like,
I think there's a lesson to be learned.
If
there.
You're playing Sonic 3D Blast and you accidentally mash the buttons and get a secret code, just pace yourself. I don't really know what the lesson is.
I mean, maybe skip like 2 levels or something, you know?
But actually, I don't blame them. The levels in that game are pretty awful. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually not a very good game.
Yeah. That story was better before I actually played through the game.
Yeah. I still remember that vividly. All right, so now I'm going to play a track here, and this is our track of the week. Dun-dun-dun-dun. we actually played, this is the track we played when we, you know, started the podcast that you heard. We're going to play it again. We only played a little bit of it, and we didn't really talk about it.
Hey, Carl, please don't actually insert the actual track over that, because I'm probably not in the right key at all, and it'll sound really awful.
I think I don't know.
Please don't. Everyone, I'll think about it. Everyone vote, and if you want... no, screw it. Just don't.
By the time they hear it, it might already be in there.
Yeah. Come on, please.
Wow. Or maybe
I don't want you to give the impression that I have really bad pitch.
Dude, I'll just throw auto-tune on you. All right, here is the track of the week. This is Spineless Funk from Interstate 76. Spineless Funk from Interstate 76.
We played in with this track.
Yeah, this is our track of the week. This soundtrack was composed by Arian Salazar. And one really interesting thing, I don't know if you know this, Will, is he was the founding bass player of Third Eye Blind.
What?
So yeah, the bass player of Third Eye Blind... composed the soundtrack of this game.
That's not what I was expecting at all.
I know. I don't think he did. I mean, I don't know. I think his bass style is exactly the same in Third Eye Blind.
I thought you were going to give me some clarification on why it sounds like Stevie Wonder.
Oh, no, no. I'll go into that, but that's the first thing to mention is he had this kind of the studio band called Bullmark in the 90s. And so just quickly, the musicians that you're hearing on this track is him, Arian Salazar on bass. Just amazingly funky playing from him, and he wrote these songs. Tom Coster on keyboards, Brian Mantia on drums, Dave Scholl on guitar, and Les Harris on the horns. But anyway, I don't know how he got this gig to compose this track, but it's just incredibly authentic and funky, and what they did is they recorded it with vintage instruments and equipment in order to capture the classic like 70s funk sound of film and TV, of like... most kind of things you would hear at the time.
Right.
And so they really kind of went to you know, a lot of great lengths to capture that.
Well, that's really cool.
It's very cool. Yeah. And so this official soundtrack was released in a couple different formats, but pretty kind of like a cult classic soundtrack. And this was a PC game. It was like a car combat game. But yeah, interestingly enough, the guy who engineered and produced this record actually was the same guy who engineered and produced the first Third Eye Blind record, the one that has, like, Semi-Charmed Life and Graduate.
Yeah.
Which is... So he ended up working with Third Eye Blind and, like, Smash Mouth and lots of other famous bands. But I think it's just kind of cool that before that... like, a year before that album came out, they were working on this
soundtrack.
The last
thing that I think about when I hear that song would be Third Eye Blind and,
I know,
like,
right?
Crystal Meth and stuff.
No, that's, I know. I mean,
the last thing I would think about.
For me, the reason why it's surprising is because his bass playing is incredible. It's so funky and melodic. Not so much on this track, but on the we're going to play another one later.
It makes me kind of want to go back and listen to some of the Third Eye Blind.
Yeah, I never really noticed the bass in those albums. But anyway, yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool. Well, I think it's time for me again, and I'm going to be playing a track from Super Mario Land 2 from the Nintendo Game Boy. Now, I played a track from Mario Land 1, and that was by Hypnotica, and did the music for that game, and that was very good. But this is actually, the music for this game was composed by Kazumi Takada, and... we're just going to be playing the first overworld theme. And you said it had an alternate title. What's
Yeah, some people call
title?
It Athletic. It's also what it's known by.
Yeah, but this one's very catchy. And I'd like to make a claim that a little bit of this was influential to the donut lifts or whatever from Yoshi's Island, or like the one that goes like dibbity
bippity dibbity dibbity. Interesting.
It has a similar.
This came first.
It has a similar sound to it, mm-hmm. and
it's a similar vibe, man.
I'm not usually into talking about that stuff. I'm not articulating my words clearly enough. The era that it's harkening back to, I feel like they're harkening back to a similar mm-hmm. era in music. Both of these songs.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I let's listen to it again.
Okay. Here we go.
Super Mario Land 2. And if you remember last week, Marty talked about instrument switching, mm-hmm. and this song definitely has a great use of that. And again, we're not talking about physical like switching, because there's not
just
actual
like
instruments,
turning some
but,
knobs pretty much.
The attacks get different, and it even like switches octaves in different points.
Yeah, I know what you're saying as far as harkening back. It's kind of they're going for almost like a ragtime or like really really early dance tunes kind of thing.
Sort of like something that I'd hear in like a Laurel and Hardy sketch mm-hmm. or something.
Yep.
There's just sort of, there's a way, the few notes that happen at the end of one of the loops in this track reminds me of something from Yoshi's Island. I don't know if maybe I'm just going crazy.
In my opinion, that's one of the coolest things about video game music of this
right
time.
Here.
Oh, yeah.
Na, 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 na.
I see what you're saying.
The way it
could
ends
be.
Is very similar.
I doubt that he actually wasn't influenced by it,
but
it's similar.
That's, again, that's kind of like a cliched ending.
But one quick thing I want to say, I think one of my favorite things about video game music of this era is the fact that for years and years, it's like, what you said about harkening back to that older era is a new generation is enjoying that kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like ever since, I don't know, when do you think it was, the 20s or the 30s or before that? I mean, as far as what they were trying like, to harken back to.
10s,
yeah, so,
20s.
But whatever it was, a long time passing. And I think it's kind of cool that a new generation of people are enjoying this style of music.
Well, one thing that I like about this is the chords and the melody is very ragtime, but the instrumentation that's happening underneath almost sounds kind of bluegrass.
Yeah. More frantic.
It sounds like on like a banjo.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because it's not like ding, 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 mm-hmm. ding. You know, it has sort of like it's being strummed on some sort of string instrument.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting because there's no real other time where you'd get to hear those two musical
genres. I'd like
genres
to have an interview with
together.
Koji and a lot of people that were writing this kind of music and kind of ask him, what are your influences? Like, did you watch like Laurel and Hardy a lot? Or like, what like specifically are your influences
well,
that you're trying to model?
A lot of them are probably pianists and we're probably mm-hmm. big Joplin fans.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what I would guess.
It would be cool to actually interview some of these guys and just actually get down to what are some of the things that... Because,
I mean, I know that Koji Kondo adores Scott Joplin. There's no way that he doesn't, because so much of his music sounds like...
Well, yeah, we're kind of digressing a little bit here. But, okay, now we're going to go back to another Interstate 76 track. And I just want to give a quick shout-out to Andrew. He was the one who showed me the soundtrack. So, yeah, definitely a very good find. So thanks, Andrew, for that. This next track we're going to play is called Revenge Rocco Style, and pay particular attention to the bass line in this track. It's incredibly funky, but very melodic and kind of limber.
Who's Rocco? Like from Rocco's Modern Life?
Yeah, sure, that works. Here we go.
We'll be right back.
This is Revenge Rocco Style from Interstate 76, composed by Arian Salazar.
Dude, this makes me want to have like an episode where we don't play any video game music and just play like...
Just play funk. Oh, I'm totally down for that. I am a...
I can't think of anything clever, but...
I actually just started a new funk group.
Oh yeah, you told me about that. The Super Mar Funky Brothers. I don't know. I can't think of any clever name.
Disciples of Funk. Yeah, I love the bass line. I love how it's doubled with the distorted guitar. I feel like in this track, the horns are a little bit cheesy. I feel like for some reason, the combination of the distortion guitar and horns, I don't know, it's just kind of odd for me. What do you think about it?
Yeah, man.
I mean, the one thing I will say is the drums, like, the drumming is just spot on as far as, like, this style. And the sound of those, like, they're definitely a really old kit with probably old heads. It's just, like, he's right in the pocket, and him and Arian on the bass, like, they're just grooving, like,
right.
They're grooving so hard. And I love those slides on the guitar. Those end of the phrases.
I mean, I don't really know what the funk I'm talking about when it comes to funk music, like... I don't really know.
Yeah,
I can't get into the nitty gritty. It really seems kind of like enjoy it.
Like you shouldn't really kind of talk too much about.
You should just kind of feel it. It's like a paradox if you do.
Yeah,
that.
You just gotta feel it. You know. That's pretty cool, right?
Nice.
There.
Well, with that, what am I following this up with? Oh yeah. Well, this is one of the newer games that I've played. It's for the Nintendo 3DS. It's a downloadable game. It's called Pushmo. And this is, I was playing it, and then there's this one little section of this song that really just struck me. And I'm like, wow, this feels like an old school sort of video game song. But I digress. This is from a song called Challenge, so it's just from, like, it's a little puzzle game, so this is just one of the main songs that plays during a game, and there's actually no real known composer credited, but Carl has up here, it was made by Intelligent Systems, and they have some sort of go-to composer, so...
Yeah, we'll mention
people...
that after we play it, but here's Challenge from Pushmo.
That section is so gorgeous to me. It sounds like it kind of reminds me of Koji Kondo, obviously, but I think it's very pretty.
It takes a while to get in because that's the best part of it, so it kind of takes a while. The beginning of it's, you know, you're not paying attention to it that much, and then that part kind of grabs you.
That's so catchy.
So yeah, this is by Intelligent Systems. There's absolutely no way to tell who composes. I looked a long time. It's just nowhere, but I have a feeling it kind of strikes me as similar sounding to Super Paper Mario, at least
the
music. And that was Intelligent Systems, and they really don't have a lot of composers. So here are the four people that worked on Super Paper Mario, and I have a feeling one of these dudes worked on this game. Masanobu Matsunaga, Naoko Mitomi, Chika Sekikawa, and Kenichi Nishimaki. So one of those dudes probably.
Yeah, anyways, I definitely recommend this game. It's a very fun, cutesy little puzzle game for the Nintendo 3DS, and the music is really good. So, yeah, check it out.
All right, I'm going to go back to a couple weeks ago when we did our boss themes. I played a couple tracks from Lufia 2, and that was one of our tracks of the week, I believe, right? Or no, what did we go with? I think we actually went with the Mario 64 theme.
Yeah,
anyway, that
was our special whatever.
This was one of my favorite soundtracks of that day, and... It's a great soundtrack. So I want to play a non-boss song. This song is called The Earth from Lufia 2, and the soundtrack is composed by Yatsunori Shiono.
Let's
Here we go.
Do it.
the Earth from Lufia 2, composed by Yasunori Shiono.
Very pretty.
This episode's kind of like a radio show. There's really not too much to say about these tracks. And the fact that we just kind of are showing them to each other, it's a little bit different style. Yeah, we're not
in
going
a lazy
into it.
Mood too. I didn't really do my let's get on the piano, figure out the chords. And I'm
that's
just sort
I mean,
of like,
we don't need to do that every episode. There's something kind of cool about more of like a just episode where we just play some nice tracks and have a good time. I mean, next week, again, it's going to be Ease Part 2, so that is going to be much more of a...
Oh, God.
prepared, sit down, you know, in depth.
I thought my stress was over, but it turns out it's just begun.
So, yeah, we don't need to kind of have that level of in-depthness on every episode, but...
Thank God. No, I'm just kidding. I hate this damn podcast! I'm just kidding. I like it.
What do you got?
Oh, what do you got? I actually have some tracks from Contra from the NES, and I think we played... In our arcade episode, we played...
Stage one.
One of the... Yeah, good one.
That's the best one, I think.
Yeah, that's really cool. But I'm actually... The first one I'm doing is from the base level, so it's level 2 and level 4. It's like that sort of ambitious sort of 3D perspective levels where it's like third person.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Here is the bases theme.
The bass level from Contra, made by Hidenori Maezawa.
And also Keohai Sada.
Yeah, this music, it's sort of, again, going for like a rock type of thing. Some of the chords are a little bit dissonant, but that's sort of what it's going for.
Kind of a Hey Bulldog riff.
Oh, yeah. Very observant.
Yep. I mean, we don't need to spend an hour on that that song.
Yep.
Because that would be ridiculous.
Let's
okay.
just keep going.
The next track is another Saturn orchestrated song. Very good soundtrack again. And the composer, his name is Yoshitaka Atsuma, and it's the only game I saw that he was credited with. So I don't know what else he did, but he did a really good job with this game. And very popular game, really fun kind of on-rails shooter. I mean, it's called Panzer Dragoon, but I mean, I don't know, what's the difference between a dragoon and a dragon? But
well,
it seems to be the same.
Dragoon is the name of a boss in like Super Metroid. I don't know. Whatever. Just
you really don't. You really don't know what you're talking about.
That's what it is.
But anyway, there's another game.
Use the grapple beam to electrocute yourself on him, and then he dies.
There's another game, the sequel called Panzer Dragoon 2, which is 2 in German.
And how is it spelled? Draygon.
No. Zwei. 2.
No. Dragoon.
Oh. I was like, wow, you're way off. Dragoon is just dragon with an extra O,
you're
dude.
You're really bad at spelling.
Dude, just add an O. All right, so anyway, that soundtrack is actually composed by some Sonic 3 peeps. So,
Brad Buxer and Michael Jackson?
No, just the Japanese dudes. Anyway, this is from the first one. This is called Flight. This is Flight from Panzer Dragoon, composed by Yatsutaka Atsuma. And yeah, maybe it's possible this guy did some movies.
I don't know, TV shows or something.
Do you need like a little nap or something? Or
yeah,
you...
man, I'm really funkin' exhausted.
Okay, well, anyway, if this guy did some movies, he's not the most well-known composer because this is literally the only thing I saw him credited with. But
this is very interesting instrumentation. You can hear like the xylophone in the background, like
yeah. This reminds me of kind of 80s Miyazaki soundtracks.
It sounds kind of like Zelda, but I feel like a lot of Zelda sounds like old Miyazaki films. Yeah. It's very pretty. I like that you're going with a lot of the... We're both going with some of those orchestral things.
Yeah, kind
of
got a Saturn kick this week, so...
That's fun. Well, let's go back into Contra. Yeah. So this is... This song is actually a shuffle. This is from the energy field level.
Energy zone.
This level just pisses me the funk off. I really... I'm going to stop making that joke, sorry. But it really annoys me because there's these sections where, like, this flame comes down and kills you. And it's, like, the only way to get past is, like, you have to let it hit you. And then while you're in that blinking, like, invincibility state, like, it's impossible.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. This game is a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
Anyway, you mentioned this track in one of our, a few weeks ago, we played another song that it was kind of like a swung feel, and you kind of mentioned this, I think, for a second.
This, anyway. It's pretty cool. It's like a shuffle.
Yeah. Let's check it out.
Like this part right here, it's really cool. The ding, 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 ding. It's very sort of rocking. They did a good job of going for. I feel like they were trying to make a game that was pretty much like Rambo for the NES.
You're yeah,
like
I always got that vibe.
Shooting and just have some like heavy metal sounding stuff. Mm-hmm. Pretty badass.
It's kind of cool they went with that shuffle. That's heavy swung feel.
It actually helps it feel kind of more like a rock song when you have some of those.
It's the only track in the game that's like that.
Yeah. It also feels kind of epic because the way the NES instrumentation, it's not a conventional shuffle.
No.
It's just one of the rhythms that they chose to use for the bass line.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, more the percussion, but yeah. A lot of times the bass is just doing those quarter notes. But
Well, no, it was just using...
Oh, yeah, in one of the sections, yeah, it does that. I think in the B section it goes dun, 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 but...
Well, yeah, because that part's supposed to feel a little bit more linear, to feel sort of like more epic.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to go back to one of my favorite soundtracks that I've discovered in the past few months. This is UN Squadron. This was our track of the week when we were doing arcade games, I think. I played a couple tracks in that game.
How did the UN Squadron? That one's pretty awesome.
Oh, such a great, great soundtrack.
Such a great soundtrack.
Such a great soundtrack. But this was
Have
composed...
you ever seen The Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, I've seen parts of it, yeah.
Okay, never mind. Wait, what was the name of the track? What did we play? I don't even remember that song.
We played two songs from UN Squadron. I think one was...
What was the track of the week one?
Forest Bass, and then one was... I can't remember. When we play this, I'll check it out what it was. But this one is called Project 4 Fortress. And again, this was composed by just classic Mega Man people, including... the only other game that the Mega Man 2 composer did. So this is Minami Matsume, Takashi Tateshi, and Mary Yamaguchi did this soundtrack. And here is Project 4 Fortress. Section there is so piercing. As far as what the intervals are doing. And this riff is just brilliant, I think.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, this is something you guys should do. You should do like a really like rock remix of this song.
Mm.
Think yeah. how cool this would just be, like a lone like electric guitar yeah. with a
I could see that working. The guitar, then, like, the riff is great. It doesn't go where you're expecting. It's really kind of it's not ordinary.
Yeah, dude, make a remix of this. This would sound really cool, and you should like actually play drums on it. This would be nice.
This whole soundtrack is just, oh, I'm so glad I discovered this. It's a shame that Tekashi...
No, UN Squadron. Is it like people in the United Nations like fighting each other? Or?
That's something... It just seems like a space shooter from what I've seen. So, or not a space UN shooter, but just like squadron. Like a side-scrolling... I guess it's a military theme shooter.
Did they not know what the UN is?
Could have been a bad translation. I'm not sure.
Huh.
Or maybe it's a different UN. Maybe it's just it's another.
It's the first time you told me it, I'm like, oh, there's a political game?
Well, no, it's boring. A military. It's like a military-based shooter. So maybe it's just a different UN. Maybe it stands for something else. But yeah, I really don't know the plot of it. But great soundtrack. So yeah. Now it is your turn.
So this is actually one of mine. It's from Super Mario 3D Land, and this is the snow level. This is another more recent track that I played.
Yeah.
It's from, if you've ever played Super Mario 3D Land, it's the level where it's like winter out, and there's like, I hard to explain, you're on these uh-huh. like big platforms.
Yes.
The 3D effect is really cool on this level. Oh, yeah.
That's the first time when I was playing the game where like, the 3D effect just was like, yes! It was just so
the
big
game is The game is very good.
I think this is one of probably the best songs in the game.
This is, yeah, one of the better songs.
Do you want me to help you out with the composers?
No, you just hold my hand while I try to do this. Okay. Asuka Hiyazaki.
Not really.
Whatever. Sorry. And then Mahito Yokota, I can say that one right. He, if you remember, he did
Galaxy,
Mario Galaxy
1 and 2.
Other things. Shigetoshi Gohara, Takayashi Hama, and...
Wow.
What, no?
Just keep going.
And Yuya Takazawa.
Sure, yeah, that's... I guess that sounds kind of
close.
Was
it really that bad?
It was pretty bad. It's a good thing we'll have the playlist typed.
No, see, why don't
because if any of those four people other than Mahito, if they were listening, they'd probably be pretty offended by that. Which I'm sure they are listening to this.
I doubt they'd be offended because even when you think you're pronouncing it right, you're probably pronouncing it wrong because they
at least I'm not adding like five letters and like another I and like four O's and stuff.
Did I do that?
Pretty much. All right, so this is Snow Theme from Super Mario 3D Land.
That is the snow theme from Super Mario 3D Land, and I really enjoy this one. It's kind of goofy, and the fact that it has that accordion, it kind of reminds me of the snow level from Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
Uses a similar instrumentation, but overall the music here is kind of like, this is such a cute little theme.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Mario Galaxy music. I have a feeling this track was composed by Mahito Yokota actually. Because the quality of this music actually stands out in the game.
Yeah.
So that's what leads me to believe that. It's hard with these soundtracks that are composed by so many different people. It's like, who knows if one of them, like, just kind of maybe helped with, like, the technical side of it.
They really should have just gotten Mahito Yokota to do the music. Mm-hmm. It's a Mario game.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest
negatives.
It
was slightly disappointed.
One of the biggest negatives for the game for me is, like, the game was good, but I feel like the one thing that they didn't take seriously enough, and to me it transcended the entire experience just because of this fact, mm-hmm. they didn't put enough effort in the music.
Agreed.
And it wasn't that much, like, worse or better than any other Mario game. It's a great Mario game. It just, it didn't feel like they mm-hmm. put as much heart and soul into it.
Exactly.
Partially because it's a similar engine as, like, Galaxy, and the fact that the music seemed a little phoned in.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if it was all at this sort of level.
But still,
of quality.
It was a good time. It was very impressive. The whole point of it was trying to introduce the 3D effect, which it did.
Yeah, it did a very, very good job, and the game is great.
Yeah, so maybe I guess it did what it was trying to do. But all right, we're gonna go to such a nostalgic soundtrack for me. This is back in 2001 when I asked for a Game Boy Advance for Christmas and I got it. This was one of the first games that I actually got. I think I got this on Christmas Day. This is Wario Land 4, and I didn't ask for this game. So I was kind of like, because what I really wanted was Mario Kart Super Circuit, which I didn't get for like weeks later. I actually had to buy that myself. But anyway, I got this game, and surprisingly, it's one of my favorite Game Boy Advance games.
Remember,
it's
your
amazing.
Game Boy Advance didn't work at first? Like, he tried to
I just
do
didn't
it.
Put the cartridge
we,
in
we
all
We have,
way.
Like, a home video of that, and he's like, Mom, it's not working. It doesn't work. And she's like, oh, did you put it in right? And then he's like, no, it's not working. And he didn't put in the cartridge.
Wait a second. Why did you make Mom sound like a thick, like, Minnesotan stereotypical?
Because we live in Minnesota, so I just...
But she doesn't... She doesn't sound like
that. Yeah, but Carl, we have people listening from around the world. This is a pretty well-known
podcast. I
know, but
we already sound Minnesotan enough, so we don't need to, like, add more to it, you know?
Whatever. Anyways, it was funny.
It was
kind of
funny.
I remember that.
Mainly because it's on like, recorded on video.
Yeah.
But, I didn't know what I was doing with it.
He didn't put in the cartridge far enough. What an idiot.
I didn't want to break it. You know, you have to apply a lot of pressure to get it in there. Anyway, we digress. This is from Wario Land 4. This is composed by Ryoji Yoshitomi, and another kind of obscure composer, hasn't done a lot, and very kind of odd composer, like, to say the least. A lot of the songs in this game are very out there, and this is one of them. This is Palm Tree Paradise, one of the most recognizable tracks of the game, but it features samples of a Japanese singer. A female pop singer.
Yeah, it's very unique. It's very pretty.
Yeah, so here is...
But I won't say too much about it.
Here is Palm Tree Paradise.
Hello there.
Palm Tree Paradise. It's ridiculously Japanese sounding.
Well, yeah, I think part of that is there's someone singing in Japanese.
I don't know. I think it's more the bass line, though.
This is very nostalgic to me. I'd just like to say something, because the same guy, very weird, did like the music to the WarioWare games, and they also have
one of them, I think.
That lady doing the singing and the fidelity of all the instruments, and like there's this weird sort of overtones happen.
His music is perfectly suited for the Wario Land games, too, because WarioWare games, because they're so weird and unorthodox. And what was cool is each note that she's singing probably had to be sampled separately. You can hear the decays in each specific note. It's kind of interesting, but impressive for the GBA. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, it's time for your last track of the day.
Okay, and we mentioned Eric Chahi earlier in the game, and we actually mentioned
in the game.
Oh, whatever. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Earlier in the podcast... What's this called again? No. But we mentioned this game, Another World or Out of This World, and this is the main theme. And Eric Chahi is from France, and this composer is also French. It was his name is Jean-Françoise, and then I don't know how you pronounce his last name.
Freitas.
It'd be like Freitia or something. Mm-hmm. Freitas, probably something
That's
like
enough.
That.
Just...
And this is the Another World theme.
Okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm. So this is the Another World theme from Out of This World or Another World, and this is, again, is kind of like a film score. It very well sets the tone to the beginning of the game.
And because here,
not just much backstory, just a cutscene. A professor goes into his lab on a stormy day. He's doing this experiment, and here it builds up all this tension.
He's waiting for the experiment. Experiment will start in 20, 19, 18. He opens up
and then it gets
beer
to zero as soon as this little twinkle part stops.
Yeah, right here.
And then the lightning strikes, yeah, and great. He gets taken away. It's very artistic and very well done.
Yeah, we highly recommend. So today we highly recommend two games to you: Heart of Darkness and Out of This World.
Both
for sure,
designed by Eric Chahi.
All right, so this is our podcast. We apologize for the length; it's pretty long. Not the most organized today,
but it was fun.
It
was fun. This is, again, like we said, this is just a little habit we'll get into. Yeah. Do this every.
But
few
next week,
or so.
Definitely expect a lot more. Very solid
structure.
Structure, yeah.
Structure, mm-hmm. You know, very advanced. Like, we'll be both writing papers and papers, mm-hmm. and like I'll write an essay.
Theses,
and,
if you will. Yeah. So next week is Ease Part 2.
Theses.
So I greatly look forward to that. We're gonna play some music from the rest of the series. But anyway, we're going
to... And again, feel free to subscribe and follow us on Twitter, iTunes, all that stuff. We have all of that magical interwebland goodness available at our blog. So please feel free to do all of that and, you know, post it on Facebook or share this to your friends. Or
yeah, we
know,
really appreciate you guys,
you guys
your support so far. You're listening and you're subscribing. Really, you know, it makes us... really want to kind of go above and beyond and keep doing this podcast. So
it's the reason why this episode was as organized as it was.
Well said. All right, we're going to leave you guys with another track from Wario Land 4. This is The Big Board. Have a great week, guys. We'll see you.